let's chant for those prayer verse. Yes.
Abhyayam tuma mangani vak prana chakshushrotramatho paramindriyani cha sarvani sarvam brahma upanishadam maham brahma nirakuryam mama brahma nirakarot anirakaranam me astu tadatmanirate ya upanishat sudharmaste mai santu te mai santu om shanti shanti shanti.
So repeat after me. Just do a little bit more on the prayer verse, and then I'll do the intro to the introduction to the Upanishad. Okay. Om Abhyayantu.
Om Abhyayantu.
Mama Angani.
Mama Angani.
Vak Pranaha Chakshuhu.
Vak Pranaha Chakshuhu.
Shrotram Atho.
Shrotram Atho.
That's actually Shrotram Atha U.
Shrotram Atha U.
A plus U is O. There's two words. Two indeclinants. So. Balam Indriyani.
Balam Indriyani.
Cha Sarvani.
Cha Sarvani.
First sentence. So, here we go. Om. Apyayantu. So apyayantu is lot in the third person plural. Lot means an imperative. And it means, in the third person plural, it means may they grow in strength. Apyayantu, that's what the verb is. May they grow in strength. Apyayantu. So what should grow in strength? Mama angani. Apyayantu. Mama means mine, my. Me or mama both mean my. My angas, my limbs. May all of my limbs grow in strength. So apyayantu, mama, my angani. Then, what are those limbs? Shrotram, the ears. Atta, and indeed, also indeed. Vak, I forgot one thing. Vak, my speech. Pranaha, so you see Vak, Pranaha, Chakshuhu. Prana means the five pranas. What are the five pranas? Prana, Apana, Udana, Vyana, Samana, or whatever order that you do it. Those, the whole physiological system. You can talk about it as the breath also, but then you have to move on to all of the other things. Okay? So may all of my limbs increase, grow in strength. What are they? My vak, speech, my prana, the whole physiological system, my eyes, shrotram, the ears, atau, and indeed, moreover indeed, Balam Indriyani Chasaravani, and all of the indriyas, all of the organs, the indriyas are really the sense organs and the organs of action, right? The karma indriyas, so the jnana indriyas and the karma indriyas, may all of them increase in strength. And also, in Swamiji's commentary, which hopefully you'll be getting, that U also means with the Sarvani and anything else you can think of in terms of the strength of the sense organs, the strength of my body, the strength of all the different aspects of my body, all of the karmendriyas, the jnanendriyas, everything that I need and to help me gain this knowledge. So may my body, my pranas, my sense organs, my organs of action, may they all be strong and continue to be strong. Why we could be want to have a healthy body for many, many reasons. We have many reasons, but this prayer is the prayer that goes with this particular Upanishad, that's in Samaveda. I'll tell you more about that in a minute. But this particular prayer is the prayer that we say before beginning the Upanishad. And so these prayers are called Shantipatas. I'm actually praying that I can have all of the Shanti and everything that I actually need. Even all of the securities, enough wealth, enough money, a good vehicle to get me to class, all of the things that are necessary for me to be able to be available for and to gain this knowledge. So of course it means, like, say, if I have a stomach ache, you know, my stomach is upset, it's hard to sit in class. You can sit in class, then you feel like, you know, you can't be there all the way. Or say your body is hurting. You're sitting in class, but your body is hurting, so that's taking your attention, you know, or whatever it may be. I'm praying that this whole upadhi, the whole jiva upadhi, you know, be in a good enough condition to make me available for this knowledge. And so sarvam, so he says, in fact, all of the indriyas, may they have balam. Balam means strength, but balam also means the capacity. May all of them have the capacities that are needed in order for me to gain this knowledge. Then what is it? What is the knowledge that we want to gain? So he says, so repeat after me, sarvam,
sarvam,
brahma,
brahma,
aupanishadam.
Aupanishadam.
Au remains there. Okay. So what does he say to start with? So having said this, sarvam, everything, all, everything is Brahman. Right? Brahman, which is aupanishadam. Aupanishadam is a tadita. It's a tadita, it means that it's a noun that's become, gone through, added some pratyas in order to make it into a derivative type of noun. So here, from Upanishad, we get aupanishadam. That vriddhi letter is the giveaway for tadita. And so it means, in this case, everything is Brahman. That Brahman, that one that is taught in the Upanishads, that is taught by the Upanishads, or that one that you find there in the Upanishads, because there's no Brahman out here. You know, Brahman, the word Brahman itself is born of the Upanishads, exists in the Upanishads. So there's no other place to find the meaning of this word. So the word Brahman, which is to be known through the Upanishads, is the idea. So everything is, if I fill it out a little bit, everything is Brahman, that Brahman which is revealed by the Upanishads. Remember that it's not a word out here, you know, like chair or desk or something, you know, or even like time or space. These are words for things that exist as an object within the creation, you know. And so we know these words, and we have the means of knowledge also to know what these words mean. Most of our language, or all of it, until we get to Vedanta problem, all of it is labeling something that exists within the creation, right? And so we know the meaning of this, of that. But the word Brahman is not an object that exists within the creation. It is an object, it is a nama, a name. The name word Brahman is a nama that is held and revealed, the meaning of revealed, by the Upanishads themselves. So it's, the Upanishads actually are the means of knowledge for revealing the meaning of the word Brahman. They are the means of knowledge. I'll get into that in a minute, though, after we finish this. So, after we understand basically what this verse is saying. So, sarvam, Brahma, everything, all is Brahman. It's all nominatives, all the first case. So, sarvam, Brahma, in neuter, sarvam, Brahma, aupanishadam. Brahman, everything is Brahman, that Brahman which is revealed by the Upanishads. Okay? Then it says, repeat after me, ma aham,
Ma aham.
Brahma.
Brahma.
Nirakuryam.
Nirakuryam.
So, ma is a negative, and it means nirakuryam. It should also be imperative or ling. Can't remember. Anyway, it's been used as an imperative. Ma aham brahma nirakuryam. It means aham. Ma aham nirakuryam brahma. May I not reject, turn my back on, become disinterested, or, you know, in Brahman. So may I not, literally, may I not reject Brahman. And so what does that mean? May this knowledge remain foremost in my heart. May my mumukshutvam, may my desire to know Brahman, may nothing ever displace that. May I not give up on Brahman for something else. So may I never in any way turn my back on or reject Brahman, reject gaining this knowledge. So ma, may I not, then ma is the negative. So aham means I, then Brahman. Aham nirakuryam ma. Ma aham nirakuryam Brahma. May I never turn my back on. May I never reject Brahman. May I never decide to do something else. Let Brahman go by the wayside. We'll pick it up later. No. May you stay with this. So the prayer is from the standpoint of the seeker. May I never get lost. May I never get lost or distracted, taken away from the pursuit of this knowledge. Just a little aside there. That doesn't mean that we don't do other things. But everything else that we do, all the work that we do, you know, all of the families that we raise, all, we are busy. Life is busy, you know. Even a sannyasi is busy. Swamiji was the busiest person I've ever met in my life. But, honestly, he was the busiest person. But what was always at the center of everything he did was his knowledge and his commitment to that knowledge, his owning of that knowledge, his commitment to that knowledge, his teaching of his knowledge. Everything was that, even though he did so many other things. And we also do many, many other things. But those other things that we do are like subsidiary or secondary to our knowledge. Well, another way of saying that is everything that we do, even that which is the very most dear to us, is held within our knowledge and blessed by our knowledge. And in fact, the way that we do everything we do is in light of our knowledge. I'll say that in a minute. Okay, so may I never turn my back on or push Brahman to the side. Then, repeat, ma-ma, brahma,
brahma,
nirakarot.
Nirakarot.
Okay, this is nice. Ma has two meanings. You know, ma means me in the accusative singular and 2-1 ma as a secondary form, ma-ma. And it also means not. So this is a nice little play on words. May, so nirakarot, reject. So may Brahman, Brahma, now is in the neuter nominative singular, 1-1. Okay. So may Brahman ma not reject me. Right? So ma, one ma is not, and the other ma is me. Okay. So may Brahman not reject me. So may Ishwara, so Brahman is Ishwara, because Brahman was not going, doesn't do anything to reject anybody. But may Bhagawan's grace stay with me. May I have Bhagawan's blessings and grace, at least until I get knowledge, then you can forget it. But may Bhagawan's grace, you know, bless me, stay with me, help me all the way through to get this knowledge, to own this knowledge. May it never wear out. May it never wear out. Another thing that is added here is in this teaching tradition, the guru, the teacher, is the one who, in fact, has this knowledge, which means that from the teacher's vantage point of their knowledge and who they are the ones who already know I am Brahman, and the mumukshu, the jignasu, the one who wants to gain this knowledge, is the one who wants to know I am Brahman. So the teacher who is Brahman, who is Ishwara, is giving this knowledge to the student who's the jignasu, who wants to be Brahman, who wants to know I am Brahman, who wants to know, in fact, I am Ishwara. Okay? So here, this mama brahmanira kuru, may the teacher never reject me or push me away. You know? That's a very beautiful prayer for both the student and the teacher. May we never in any way reject each other, so that this knowledge is always will always be protected. So, mama brahma nirakarot. Now he says the same thing in a little bit different way. So repeat after me. Anirakaranam.
Anirakaranam.
Astu.
Astu.
Anirakaranam.
Anirakaranam.
Me astu.
May
so here, if you see the similarity between nirakuryam, nirakarot, and now they're using it in a nominal form as a noun, anirakaranam, and it's nirakaranam is negated by the a, so anirakaranam, anirakaranam astu. It says let there be no rejection, means because of the next half we'll see what it's meant there. Let there be no rejection on the part of Brahman and the part of Ishwara. Anirakaranam astu. May there be no rejection. The negative there is in the So you got nirak. If I were just to say nirakaranam astu, let there be rejection. Okay. But it's anirakaranam astu. Let there be no rejection. And then it says again, anirakaranam me astu. Let there be no rejection on my part, for me. Let me not be one who rejects in any way this knowledge. Let me not reject this knowledge. Let me not reject the Guru-Sisha relationship. Let me not reject Brahman. Let me not reject Ishwara. In other words, may I be protected in this knowledge. So, anirakaranam astu, anirakaranam me astu. And then he says, repeat after me. Tad Atmani.
Tad Atmani.
Nirate.
Nirate.
Ya.
Ya.
So it'd be Yaha.
Yaha.
If I do the Sunday. No, it would be Ye. Ye.
Ye. Ye.
The A drops. Becomes I. And then the Yakara drops. Mm. Ye. Okay. Ye. Upanishatsu.
Upanishatsu.
Dharmaha.
Dharmaha.
Te.
Te.
Mayi.
Mayi.
Santu.
Santu.
So now the student says, the jignasi says, Tad Atmani Nirate Ye Upanishatsu Dharmaste Dharmahate Mayi Santu. So starting with this, Ye Upanishatsu Dharmaha Te. Those dharmas, yea, which are Upanishatsu, which are in the Upanishads, because all of the dharmas, we'll see in a minute, all of the dharmas are taught in the Upanishads. What kind of dharmas? The dharmas for the Adhikari, the Viveka, Vairagya, Shamadhamma, Upalatita, Diksha, Shraddha, Samadhanam, Mumukshutvam, these, I'll go through these again in a minute. But so just to get the sentence, it says, Dharmaha te, those dharmas, ye, which are taught, which are in the Upanishads. Upanishatsu is locative plural. Those dharmas which are in the Upanishads, may those dharmas, mayi santu, may they be in me. Mayi means in me. May those dharmas be in me. And then, tad atmani nirate, at the very beginning. These are all locatives. Tadatmani and nirate are locative singular, so is mayi. So me, at the end, may these dharmas be in me, who is what? One who nidate, one in me who is reveling, or who one is one who revels, or who loves. The idea is the one who is a jignasu, the one who really wants to know, who has a love for this knowledge, has a love for what knowledge? Who revels in the Atma, which is Brahman. So the Tat stands for the Brahman. Tat stands for Brahman. It means that. It stands for Brahman. And where in this prayer? Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam. So it stands for Brahman. It means the one who is reveling in, committed to what? That Brahman, which exists in the Upanishads, which is myself. Aham Brahmasmi is the Mahavakya. So the one who is reveling in means that's where my commitment is. My commitment is in that knowledge, into the owning of that knowledge, which is what? The identity between the self and Tat. Tat means that Brahman, which is everything, and the Brahman to be found in the Upanishad, Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam. Then he says, so may all of the dharmas, the dharmas are what? They're all of the qualities, a jignasu, one who desires this knowledge, a mumukshu, one who desires liberation, needs to some relative amount to start with in order to even be able to have a mind that has the ability to gain the knowledge. And so those are basically what we call the sadhana chatushtiya. Chatushtiya means a group of four. Sadhana means four sadhanas. In this case, for the sadhana chatushtiya, we have four capacities of mind, that are necessary to gain this knowledge, that act as sadhanas. They are the means that my mind has to have, the qualities that my mind has to have in order for it to be a vehicle for gaining this knowledge, because the knowledge has to take place in my mind. And so what makes my mind like a vehicle or be able to function as the receiving vehicle, of this knowledge that is being given? And so here, so these dharmas are going to be the sadhana chatushtiya, these group of four. Where are they again? Viveka. So all of them we need to have to a good enough degree, like a good enough mother, you have to have a good enough degree to be able for it to be able to really understand what the teacher is saying. So what is the viveka? Nitya, anitya, vastu viveka. That means that for a mumukshu, I know as a jnani, I will know the difference between what is time-bound, anitya, and what is timeless, nitya. But for the mumukshu, I have half of that done. I know what is time-bound, and I want to know what is free from time. And the reason I want to know why that's important for me is because what is time-bound by nature can't give me anything that is lasting, right? If you put a bunch of time-bound things together, they're going to give a time-bound result. And so that anityatvam, that state of being time-bound, is really the nature of everything that exists in the creation. And once I recognize that, I start to become a mumukshu, because then the question is, that understanding brings about, well, then how can I fulfill any kind of fulfillment other than temporary glimpses? Because everything that's involved in the nature of being full or complete is itself time-bound. And what is time-bound can't give me something that is lasting. So it's as well as asking, is there anything about me that is free from time? And is that thing about me that is free from time ananda? Or is it dukkha? It has to both. I need to know something about myself that is both free from time and gives me this the idea of what we say with moksha is kritya krityaha, that or kritya krityaha, that which is to be done, krityaha, that has been done. I am finished. There's nothing more. There's nothing more for me to gain. And it's not going to go away because it's nitya. And so I'm seeking what is nitya, having recognized that everything that I experience, including my body, mind, sense organ, states of mind, is anitya. So that dharma of viveka is necessary. Vairagya is necessary. Vairagya comes from viveka. Vairagya means the dispassion. Now all of these things that are still important to me in one way or another are not primary, though. They have dropped down a rank, because I know that none of them can actually give me what I am really seeking. And so that vairagya rises for the mumukshu. And the vairagya resolves itself in knowledge, because the first part of vairagya is, kind of, this isn't going to work. Nothing here will work to give me what is essential to my own self. It won't work because of its temporal nature. And so I gain a vairagya, not that I'm not engaged in all of these things. I'm engaged, but I can't ask them to give me what they can't give. And so I become a seeker for the other side of vairagya, And that is only the Atma. And so vairagya fulfills itself in the wholeness of the self, through knowledge. And then he gives a list, what we call the shamadhi shatka. Shatka means a group of six, beginning with shama. So these are just six qualities of the mind I have to have in order for my mind to be available. So if you have some degree of good enough viveka, good enough vairagya, then you will find that your mind has good enough shamadhi shatka. So shama. Shama means that you have some control. Not as much as you want, but you have some control over your mind. You have the ability to let thoughts go by. Like to say something like, no, I'm not going to go there. That is not going to be a good pursuit for my mind. I'm not going to go there. You can let it go. You have that capacity. You're not a master, but you have enough of it. You have a value for it. And then the second one, dhamma, is when my mind or certain vrittis or emotions catch me, and so now I'm pulsating, my body's pulsating with pain or anger or hurt, then I have the capacity to not act out on it. I have a choice. That's a great quality. Not everybody has that quality. Sometimes for some people, when that anger comes, or for some of us too, at sometimes, you fail at that, that anger comes and it just goes ripping right out of your mouth or out of your, you just act out the thing. You didn't have that little moment reprieve where you can make a decision not to act out on that, right? But we have it. For the most part, we have it to a good enough degree, Upadati means that I'm able to study something for a prolonged period of time. I'm not a dilettante, like we'll study a little bit of this, study a little bit of that. In fact, I have the sannyasa guna. The sannyasa guna is that quality, not that I've taken orange, but these values are moksha and these values are primary to me. And what that means, everything else I do is a sadhana. It's not that I don't do lots of things, but they're a sadhana for me. They're a means for me to mature in these values and to mature in my knowledge. That's upadati. The other meaning of upadati is sannyasa itself is upadati. Means that there's a single-pointed commitment. We also have that upadati in layman's language, and just as a layperson, that I'm able to stay with the subject matter until mastery. Because you can get bored to do something 2 or 3 years, that's enough of that, let's try something else. That takes a different kind of commitment to follow something all the way through until you have mastery of it. And so people like great musicians, great athletes, they didn't just become that, They may have had some scars that helped them along the way, but there's a long-term commitment involved. A mathematician, anything, is a long-term commitment. That to have that commitment is upadati. And so now, using this word upadhi in reference to gaining this knowledge, to gaining moksha, it's a commitment. That's what I'm doing this life. That's what I'm doing. I do other things too, but they're all held within the basket of that. Swamiji used to tell stories several times. He told the story when he was younger, in his 20s, because he had such a beautiful voice and such a natural capacity with music. He had so much music all through his whole life. He had so much music in him, you know, that musicians really wanted to teach him. They wanted him to really get into music, you know, because he had vibhutis. He had musical vibhutis. And he loved music also. But it came down to, do I want to gain mastery as a musician, or do I want to gain mastery in Vedanta? And mastery in Vedanta is kind of the wrong word, you know. But he realized, you know, you can't split your mind in that way. I'll study music half the day and Vedanta the other half of the day. He just said, no, that won't work. It won't work for me. I want my life to be single-pointed. That's that upadhiti. He didn't divide himself in a way that would be real. Again, you have to be careful of these words. It's not that we don't do other things, that we don't enjoy other things, but there's one primary pursuit in which all of these other things are held. So upadhiti titiksha. Titiksha is for a mamukshu. It isn't important to me. If, say, I really want to love to go skiing, I would really want to go skiing. It'd be so much fun, and a group of us are going to go skiing. And, you know, it just happens to be a warm day, and it's pouring down rain, totally wrecking the snow, okay? So this plan is not going to work. This is not going to be a ski day for us, okay? That's what it is. It's not going to be a ski day for us, so let's do something else. That's titiksha, you know? Because I could be saying, oh, my life is ruined. I was so looking forward to this. This is the biggest bummer that I've ever had to experience. I can't, whatever. Titiksha is your ability to be with the world as it is and know that it's not always, you know, at your beck and call. It just isn't. And that's fine. What if it wasn't fine? That's such a problem. Because since you don't have control over all of these things, you're only happy when things go, when nature, when the universe, you know, goes according to your wishes. So that means you spend a lot of time upset. In fact, if we could even, in some instance, some ways say, the absence of titiksha is what makes punya papa, the 50-50, that experiences that we have in this life. Say our prarabdha karma is something like 50% punya, 50% papa. That means 50% of the situations, approximately, are not really geared toward making you happy. They're difficult, like the skiing example. Yeah, that's like a papa, right? Because it's something you really wanted, you didn't get it, and so that's Bhagavan just, okay, let's throw that one in there. That'll be, you know, kind of a negative. That'll take care of that part of the papa. You know, and then there's the punyas, those ones that are things that are just designed to make you happy. So when those are there, you're happy because Bhagavan is really accommodating you. You deserve that. That's a reward. You know, so as long as you're feeling well and everything, you can really enjoy that punya. But what if you take the papas as a very personal assault? You know, I wanted this and I'm not getting it. Then 50% of your time is going to be pretty disturbed, you know, unhappy. Whereas in fact, none of it has to be unhappy. None of it, if you're objective and just allowing flow with the punches, so they say, because the universe is not going to give you orna punya. Not going to happen. And so there'll be things that are difficult. And then we just say, okay, that pop is over. Good. We used to when Swamiji had some really bad things in his chart, especially when he was older and, you know, not very well. He was not walking that steadily and things like that. But there were some really tough, very tough times in his chart, his astrology chart. And so something at the during the time would happen, like one time Swamiji slipped on some ice and fell and kind of hurt his hip, you know, got this bruised in his hip. But then he got up and he continued, even though it was quite a fall. He got up and we brushed him off and, "You okay, Swamiji?" "Oh, yeah, yeah." And then we went to the class. Everyone was so happy that Swamiji fell because he had a really bad something in his chart. And because everybody's following his chart all the time. So, so there was this window. And then they thought, okay, this was pretty bad. He fell, but he's completely okay. You know, I said he bruised his hip. And so maybe this is taking place now. You know, thank God. So, a titiksha, you know. And then shuddha. Shuddha means that we say Ishwara Anugraha, Bhagavan's grace, just for Bhagavan's grace, really. Somehow, with that blessing of tremendous punya, crores of punya, for whatever reason, you have shraddha. Shraddha in the teacher and in the teaching, the Upanishads and the teacher. Because without the shraddha, as we'll see as we go through the Upanishad, without that shraddha, your mind's not available. Because the teaching, the Upanishads are taking place, coming out of the mouth of the teacher, and the Upanishads themselves, you know, it's not like the Atma is out here to point to, yes, there really is an Atma here, see? It's really here, this is it. No. The mind has to be completely available to do all of these teaching methodologies to recognize the nature of yourself and the mithyatva, the nature of this world. The mind has to be available. What if the mind has no... How can there be Upanishads? How can there be Upanishads that are revealed at the beginning of the creation by Bhagavan? How is that even possible? Am I really supposed to believe that? You know? You either have shraddha in it, you'll see this in the Upanishads as we go. You either have shraddha or you don't. You know? If you have shraddha and you have shraddha in the teaching, in the teacher, means that knowledge can come through this particular teacher, then the efficacy of the Upanishads, efficacy means like the blessing of the Upanishads, the working of the Upanishads as a pramana, is available to take place. If that adhikaritvam is there, that state of being a qualified student, to good enough mothering, good enough adhikari, you know, not all the way, of course, you know, if that is there, and the teacher is there who is part of the sampradaya. Part of the sampradaya means that there's this teaching has been handed down, guru to sisha, going back to Dakshinamurti, going back to Ishwara. So it's the Upanishads need to be unfolded, they need to be handled, and that's all part of that teaching tradition. It's not go study the Upanishad and come back and I'll give you a test on it, see if you've studied it adequately enough. That's not going to work. It's not going to work because the words have to be handled by the teacher. But because all of the words that we have available to us are only defined within duality. And Brahman is not an object within duality. So these words have to be handled, and the handling of the words are the prakriyas. Those are the teaching methodologies that are handed down from teacher to student, teacher to student. If you were to go read an Upanishad, a teacher who has been taught, you know, within that sampradaya, they see the prakriyas, they're right there. But a student who just is studying the Upanishad will have no idea even what a prakriya is. The Upanishads won't be handled as a prakriya, as a teaching methodology. That sampradaya will be missing. So if you're hand studying by yourself, you'll think, I remember, you know, opening an Upanishad book when I was like 14 and thinking, wow. But do you think I know? It resonated so much with me. Do you think I knew anything, what it really meant? it just resonated. That's all. I certainly couldn't tell you what was really being said there. Or say the teacher themselves have not been exposed to that sampradaya, that teaching methodology, then they will also teach it as something to study and then go meditate on to try to realize what they're talking about. Then it's not being handled by a pramana, as a pramana. That is exactly what happened to Swamiji, to Puja Swamiji. His teacher, you know, knew all of the Upanishads, and he didn't do the commentaries really, but he knew all of the Upanishads. He was very charismatic. And listening to him, you could definitely get, like, seeing things. But it was just by chance. Just by chance that something clicked in your mind, probably from previous samskaras, you know. But there was no handling of the Upanishads as a pramana. It was teach these Upanishads, you know, say what they have to say, and then you must go meditate on it to try to have an experience of it. It does not work. Swamiji meditated until he lost his hair, you know. He meditated so much, you know, and he knew all of them. He knew all of the Upanishads by heart. He chanted the Bhagavad Gita all the way through and backwards, every day. It was like a discipline. He did it for a long time. He had all of the Upanishads. He had all of the Shankara Bhashyas. He had an incredible library of all of the Vedantic texts in his little kutir up in Rishikesh. He had so much. And then at some point he got so frustrated, he gave all his books away. He had a huge library. He gave it all away. And then, after he gave all those books away, then he met this teacher, Pranavananda, who just had, as Swamiji would say, he had maybe 10 lectures at the most under his belt that he could teach. That was it, you know. But he knew the Vedanta as a pramana, and he taught it that way. And then once Swamiji heard that, he got that, all of his knowledge, all of his studying, you know, everything, click, 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 pramana, it was all everywhere. He said that he saw the pramana everywhere. Yeah, he didn't even know about a pramana. He saw all of it everywhere. Everywhere he read, everything they could sell. That was the end of it. As it was his karma, I guess he had to know everything backwards and forwards by heart, you know, and do all of that nitya-dhyasana did so much. But then, when it was time for him to get it, this one Swami Pranavananda listened to just a few lectures of his, and everything was completely taken care of. So that was his way of really gaining this knowledge. And so, of course, for Swamiji, you know, like with every student of Vedanta, highlights the things that were the most important to them for gaining this realization. And for Swamiji, it was realizing the Vedanta actually as a pramana and how it needs to be taught in that way. He was a master. He worked all the time. He was never lazy. He always worked so diligently to teach this knowledge in such a way that the students would get it. And then he would be very careful. He would realize, okay, this word is not really working anymore. This word has been kind of spoiled. Especially with using a word like consciousness or awareness. Because I'm conscious of that. Yeah, I'm aware of that. And so he would change his usage of words. You know, even talking about the manifestation of the creation, he changed that to the manifestation of infinite knowledge. Because the unfoldment is so much more accessible, so much more to the point to understand exactly what this is. Just like if I ask you to think of an ocean, a scene on the ocean, are you walking on the beach? Immediately that comes. It's a manifestation of knowledge. Right? There it is. Think of the entire infinite creation as a manifestation of infinite knowledge. Then the whole mityatvam relates so much, you know, the maya of that relates so much to your own mind. So he He is a master of that and of Nididhyasana. He's the one that really worked on giving guided meditations, which are to be found there in the Upanishads themselves. You just don't think of it, that that's a Nididhyasana, especially in the Mandukya. There's some beautiful ones, but then the teacher can give that. So he had all of that. And so so that's a little takeoff on Shraddha. Then the last one is the Samadhan. Thank you. Very good. Okay. Samadhanam. Samadhanam is the just ability to keep your mind steady. Like say if you're listening to class, that you're able to be here for most of the class. Right? Instead of the mind not able to hold itself. Or say you're doing meditation, but your mind is not able to really stay still. So what that means for a mumukshu, and there's samadhan, there's some weakness because the mind is so busy, then we have to, the teacher has to give different ways to train the mind to give, build that muscle, you know, of the mind to be able to hold itself steady. Then the last one is the mumukshutvam. Let that desire for liberation be there for me. Let me be a mumukshu. So these are the dharmas, and all of these dharmas, whether you're studying a Prakarana Grantha, means like the Atma Bodha or Tattva Bodha or Panchadashi or any of these, or in the Upanishads themselves, these qualities are there. They are taught. They are taught because if a person is not an adhikari, is not a qualified student for this knowledge, then they're not going, it's not going to work, at least right away. And so then that can be taken as a judgment against the pramana itself, you know? And so the qualities that are necessary on the part of the student to really get this or to see it has to be understood. And how important dharma is, how important vishamadhamma upadati, these qualities of the mind are, so that we actually work on those and see, understand them in relationship to the gaining of this knowledge. So if you think about it, in terms of gaining this knowledge, there is three things involved. There's the pramatra, the one who's going to be the one who knows, who gains the knowledge. There's the pramana. There's the means of knowledge, right? This is even, and there's the prameya, the object of knowledge. So say if I want to see something, I become with my eyes, you know, with my eyes, the pramatra, the seer. And my eyes become the means of knowledge, the pramana. And then color or form become the prameya, the object of knowledge. So these three things just simply have to line up, right? But what if my eyes are blindfolded? Or what if my eyes are in trouble, I'm not able to see well out of them? Then I have to fix those eyes. They have to be fixed in order for me to be able to see. Right? So here we have the pramatra, the one who wants moksha, the one who needs to gain this knowledge. We have Brahman, the prameya, and then we have the pramana, the means of knowledge. Right? The means of knowledge. The means of knowledge are twofold, right? The means of knowledge have to do with the teacher, in this sense, the one who is handling the knowledge, the Vedanta itself, the Upanishad itself, which is being taught. That's the pramana, and that's called upayanishta. The teacher is handling the pramana in terms of shravana, manana, nididhyasana. But that knowledge has to take place in the mind, in your mind. And that's why there is upayanishta, a commitment to the antakarana shuddhi, that purity of mind, which is covered more or less in the sadhana chatushti and these fourfold sadhanas, the viveka, vairagya, the shamadhi, shatka, and the mumukshutvam. That is covered there. Because, say, Brahman is there, the self is there, no problem. Right? The pramatra is there, you are there, and you're a mumukshu, so the mumukshu is there, Brahman is there, the teacher is there, and assuming that the teacher is wielding the Upanishad Pramana properly. Okay, so we have to say that. The teacher is wielding it properly, and nothing's happening. You know, I don't get it, I don't see it, I don't understand it. Then we have to look at the antakarana shuddhi. What are the obstructions? They're called pratibandhakas. What are the obstructions that are there on the part of the student that are stopping that knowledge from taking place? So these things, you know, we have to, the teacher also has to go on learning about all these pratibandhakas, all of these obstructions. Like I told the story of Swamiji having Western students, you know, and then realizing, you know, this isn't working. Because he was adamant in his teaching that all you need is the Vedanta, that's it. It takes care of absolutely everything. But he had very serious students, Western students. And they still have had a lot of conflicts and obstructions in their mind. And so he had to learn a lot about psychology in order to be able to handle the teaching and handling the students in such a way that we could actually take care of these unconscious and psychological issues that were not dealt with by the Upanishads of old. They're not talking about psychology. They have all dharmas and all ways of being in the world and things like that, but they're counting on a dharmic world. Basically a dharmic world where the children and the situations in life create a dharmic container where there's trust and shanti, you know, relaxation, all of these kind of things. We're not in that kind of world now, you know, and so we have to have the tools to deal with that. And so the teachers all now, you know, have to know something about complexes, something about the unconscious, all of these things to help take care of the different types of pratibandhakas obstructions that are there in the mind. So it's just going a little bit deeper layer we have to go in now because we need that. And so Bhagavan has provided it. We have psychology now. We didn't have psychology 2 centuries ago in any systematic way. We have that now. We have it because we need it. You know, whether you're a mumukshu or not, just as a human being, as a dharmanishtha, you still need to know how to be with your mind in a way that it can heal and have shakti. So all of these things are necessary, and the student also has to understand that they're necessary so that they can, when they're gaining this knowledge, there's a good enough emphasis put on dharmas. Here, because here it says in this prayer, at the end of it, it goes, may all of the dharmas that are there, that are taught in the Upanishads, may all of those be in me. And then it says it again. May all of those be in me. Right? So it's just taking this Upayanishtha and Upayanishtha seriously. You know, that my life is a commitment to this knowledge and a commitment to the Antakarana Shuddhi, which is really just a healthy mind, you know, and to a healthy body so that I can have. And as it says in the beginning, may all of my limbs be really strong. May they all have the capacities that are necessary for me to be able to gain this knowledge. That's all Upayanishtha. May this whole upadi, may the whole thing be working well, you know, and support my endeavor to gain this knowledge. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. The 3 Shantis. The first Shanti is Adidaidikam. Means may Bhagavan, may all of the things that can happen in the creation, like hurricanes and thunderstorms and volcanoes and all of the different obstacles that the creation can bring, may I have shanti. Please protect me from that so that nothing interferes, that doesn't interfere with my knowledge. And then we say the second one, that's adibhautikam. May just the natural obstructions that I run into in life, you know, with the people or with animals or with roadblocks or whatever, these kind of things, may there be shanti in reference to those so that those don't interfere with my knowledge. And the 3rd shanti is adibhautikam, adhyatmakam. May I be healthy. May this upadis, may they all, you know, not function as an obstruction. May I have shanti. May I have good health. May all be well with me. So those are the three shantis. Let's just chant this together and then we'll start.
Om Abhyayantu Mamangani Vak Pranas Chakshushrotra Natho Palamindriyani Chasarvani Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam Maham Brahma Nirakuryam Mama Brahma Nirakarot Anirakaranasvairakaraname astu Tadatmani nirateya upanishat sudharmaste mai santu Te mai santu Om shanti shanti shanti